Vous êtes sur Art District Radio et c'est l'heure de retrouver Luc Seabright dans Jazz Interview pour une rencontre en anglais avec un artiste de jazz. Passez un très bon moment sur Art District.
Hi everybody, this is Luc Seabright and welcome to our Jazz Interview program. Today I'm very lucky to have on the phone with me Aaron Goldberg. Aaron is a jazz pianist and composer based in New York City. He's released 5 albums with his trio featuring Ruben Rogers on bass and Eric Harland on drums. His latest album as leader, The Now, recorded with that same rhythm section and featuring Kurt Rosenwinkel on guitar, was released in 2015 to critical acclaim. As well as being a very respected solo artist, Aaron has been a frequent collaborator with many of jazz's greatest names, such as Freddie Hubbard, Wynton Marsalis, Betty Carter. He has a long-standing association with saxophonist Joshua Redman, with whom he has toured extensively. This week, Aaron will be performing at the Sunset Sunside Jazz Bar in Paris, with Leon Parker on drums and Yasushi Nakamura on bass. That's 3 consecutive nights, on October 13th, 14th, and 15th, for the Jazz Sur Seine Festival at the Sunset Sunside. So mark those dates down in your calendar. Aaron, thanks so much for being here. How's it going?
My pleasure, Luke. Thanks for having me.
So you've got 3 concerts at the Sunset coming up. Will this be your first time playing there?
No, I've actually been playing on and off the Sunset for probably 15 years now.
Oh, wow, fantastic. So you know it quite well.
It's a little home away from home.
Oh, fantastic.
It has a unique atmosphere because the audience is literally right in front of the stage.
Yeah,
so you can reach out and touch them, and they can play with the pedals and tinkle on the end of the piano if you're not careful.
Oh, awesome. Do you often come over to Europe to play?
I do, yeah. I've been coming more and more. I think it might be the main touring destination for most American musicians these days.
So you're doing 3 nights at the Sunset, and you'll be playing with percussionist Leon Parker, and Japanese bassist Yasushi Nakamura. Have you collaborated with the 2 of them before?
Yes. I started a collaboration with Leon about 2.5 years ago. He's somebody that I played with in the early 90s when I first moved to New York.
Okay.
And he was a major figure in New York City in the 90s. He was performing with basically all the best jazz bands in the city. I mean, ranging from masters like Kenny Barron and Tom Harrell to young up-and-coming people like Brad Meldow and Josh Redman, Jackie Terrison. And so I kind of grew up listening to him, and we played once back in the 90s, and then he moved to France, and I tracked him down a couple years ago for a concert, and he had actually stopped playing jazz. But he still sounded magnificent, and now he's back. I helped kind of bring him back to New York. And,
oh, fantastic. So you got him...
happy about that.
You got him back onto the jazz scene?
Yeah, I pretty much can say that. of course, his musicianship has continued to grow all these years, but he was mostly doing body percussion and vocal percussion work, which he now brings into the context of the trio as well. So,
yeah.
A little extra fun that we have.
Yeah.
But we have a strong, nice musical connection, and it's a joy to kind of sort of like see him rejuvenate his musical interest and his passion.
You mentioned the trio, and so I'm actually quite curious about that trio setting, because it seems like you favor the trio when you record and perform as in your own name. You seem to favor that kind of setup. Is there something about the trio that really sort of suits your approach to music?
That's a good question. I think that, when I was growing up and learning this music, and when I first started to tour with various bands, it was always in a quartet or a quintet setting. So, one of the main skills you developed in that kind of setting is an accompaniment skill and the ability to make a band really sound good. So you're one of many factors, and you learn how to contribute to the overall group sound, such that it's more than the sum of its parts. And that's a that's a major musical skill that I think all the greatest pianists in jazz have had. You know, famously, you know, people like Herbie Hancock and Floyd Tyner.
Yeah.
They got their start playing in, you know, with not just, but even before Miles, with and Coltrane, you know, with other bands. So I think you learn so much from those kind of gigs, and I'm so glad that I had a chance to work like that for the majority of my career. At the same time, I was always aware that, you know, to lead a band is a different kind of skill set, and to put the piano in a leading role, and consistently, the trio is the best opportunity. I mean, there's a lot of classic trios in jazz. I, of course, grew up listening to those as well, but it was more a matter of, like, wanting to see what I could come up with as far as a group sound without another horn or another melodic instrument involved. So I wanted to just put myself in that role. And over time, I think in an organic fashion, I've developed my own sort of philosophy, aesthetic philosophy of how to play trio and what kind of trio playing I really enjoy. Because there's many, many different ways to work a piano-based drums trio.
Yeah.
For me, it's a lot about the relationship, you know, between piano and drums. And it's interesting to embark on a new kind of relationship, new piano-drum relationship with Leon.
So obviously you're playing with Leon Parker and Yusushi Nakamura at the Sunset, but sort of the trio that you've recorded with the most and that you played with, I guess, the most is the trio with Eric Harlan on drums and Reuben Rogers on bass.
Yes.
Some of our listeners will surely know them from their work with the great Charles Lloyd. You recorded with them for the first time all the way back in 1999. Can you tell us a bit about the history of that partnership and what's special to you about playing with those guys?
Yeah, it might have even been earlier. I think that's first album might have come out, I might have recorded it in 97 or 98.
Oh, okay.
So I actually met Ruben in 1992. I've been playing with him. Actually, the same year I met Leon. I met Ruben later that year.
Okay.
I was going to Harvard. He was going to Berkeley, and we were playing every weekend at a small club in Boston, Massachusetts, United States, not Boston, England. called Wally's Cafe, and so we've been working consistently together for over 25 years, and then Ruben also is a member of Josh Redman's band.
Yeah.
So many of the gigs that we've done in our lives, our professional lives, we've done together, and at some point we were joking that we've spent more time together than either of us have with any significant other in our life. Eric I met in 1997, while I was playing with Greg Tardy, and I had an instant, strong musical connection with him, and he had an original voice already. He was working on it, you know, developing his own sound.
Yeah,
and I always had a lot of respect for that. Quite, you know, he's a phenomenal drummer, and a lot of drummers get excited about Eric, but he's also an all around musician, and he's an excellent colorist at the drum set. He has the ability to play with a very wide dynamic range. And it was just a natural fit between Ruben, Eric, and me, and that's why, you know, we've been keeping the trio going for so long. And it's a little bit on the back burner now because I've been working more with this new project with Leon, but I think we'll come back together in the future as well.
Yeah, plans to reignite that partnership anytime soon, or is it still pending?
It'll definitely reignite. I'm not sure how long this new project with Leon's going to last, but it's interesting and change is good, and you know, it's bringing out different sides of me, and it's, you know, Leon is compared to Eric, he's a minimalist, and that also puts kind of new focus on the piano. I think everybody brings their strengths, and I'm interested in exploiting those as best I can, and you know, seeing what that brings out of me. Learning about new sides of myself that come out in different contexts.
Well, we're curious to discover those sides along with you. So you mentioned Boston as the place where you met Reuben Rogers and you met Eric Harlan. So obviously you live in New York City now, which is one of the world capitals of jazz, but you're from Boston, you grew up there. Boston is famous for its great music schools. So I'm curious to know what kind of environment it offered a young musician like yourself in your formative years, like growing up in a city like Boston, playing there.
Yeah, thanks for that. Good question. So I grew up playing classical piano, and then I got hooked on jazz in high school courtesy of a jazz bass player named Bob Sinekrook, who was a bass player by night and a math teacher by day. So he would play around Boston on the scene with various sort of Boston icons. And I was as soon as I started playing jazz, I was aware of the local legends like Jerry Berganzi and George Garzon and Bill Pierce. And I sort of aspired to play with them, but I never thought I would get to that level. And through Bob, I met another magnificent Berkeley professor named Hal Crook. And I had some early playing experiences with some high-level musicians in Boston before I moved to New York. So I spent a year at the New School for Jazz and Contemporary Music in Greenwich Village, 1991-92. And that's when I really got my ass kicked and I started taking music really seriously. Up until that point, I was sort of juggling many things at the same time, music being one. But you move to New York and you're competing for gigs with Barry Harris and Cedar Walton and Chick Corea.
Yeah.
And it just forces you to, take your study to a higher level and your art to a higher level. So then when I made the decision to move back to Boston and study philosophy, I did it in part because I was looking for a place where I could continue to pursue music on a high level, hopefully as high as New York, but it's not quite as high, but high enough level that it would challenge me, but yet have a little bit of distance from my New York experience such that I would actually be able to concentrate and study something else.
Yeah.
I was sort of afraid if I stayed in New York, and I thought about going to Columbia. I thought I would just be out every night playing in clubs and I wouldn't do any homework. So Boston had that magical mix that really no other city had of high-level music schools, high-level young musicians and teachers, and some local legends that I could aspire to play with, but also a little bit of an academic environment. Boston's known not just for having good music schools, but for having good universities in general.
Yeah.
So it turned out to be a very nice balance for me. I kind of lived a double life. I was studying like a normal, liberal arts university student, and then I would go over to Berkeley and being the conservatory and play with musicians there. And the Berkeley College of Music treated me as if I were a student. They kind of gave me a home there, and they even claimed me as an alumnus at some point. And I would play on all the recitals of the Berkeley students and go to the recording studio at 3 a.m. and record with Ruben and my other friends who went to school there, and played at Wally's with all the Berkeleys. And I continued to play with Jerry Berganzi and Bill Pierce while I was in college. So it was a really kind of fortunate place for me. In addition to having grown up there, I mean, I knew the city already, so it felt like home. But besides that, it was the right balance of academics and music for me at that point in my life.
Yeah. Do you still go back to play there a lot?
Yeah, I go back. My folks are still there. I go back to play, and I go back to do clinics and workshops. And it still feels like home. I fly into Boston. I've been a New Yorker for 20 years full time, and 25 years since I first came to New York. And I know in my mind I'm a New Yorker, but there's a little part of my heart that still feels like I'm a Bostonian.
Yeah. I'd like to talk about your album The Now, which is a correct me if I'm wrong, the last album that you released as a leader with your own trio. So when you talk about, in your description of the album, you talk about that sort of ephemeral, sort of transient aspect of the music being created. You mention navigating what you call the dynamic plane of the present, which is sort of the idea encapsulated in the title, The Now. I'd be curious to know a bit more about that, if you could elaborate on that, and in particular how you sort of feel you were able to translate that in the music.
My pleasure. So there's many ways I could kind of try to answer this question, but I'll try to keep it as prosaic as possible and non-philosophical. I think the simplest way to talk about what I meant by calling the album The Now is just to, you know, return people's consciousness to the fact, the unappreciated fact that all of the greatest jazz albums were improvised, yeah. meaning that if they had been recorded, you know, 5 seconds later, they would sound totally different.
Yeah.
And each take of all of those classic tunes that were recorded, you know, assuming there was more than one, sounds were extraordinarily different from the last one.
Yeah.
Even if the song is the same, the mood is the same, the solos are all different. And so everything that we love about those albums, all those solos that we can sing along with, are just literally one moment in time.
Yeah.
And they become definitive. They become canonical, but they're made in that exact moment of the unknown present. So that's the nature, the magical nature of our art. And I think it's very unlike all other forms of music. I mean, they're improvisational musics from all over the world. But, you know, jazz is kind of the highest level of improvisational music. And when it becomes recorded music, people kind of forget that.
Yeah.
So the art of making an album is very much tied up with how do you go into the studio and with your band, of course, and capture some kind of transcendent magic in what is essentially
yeah.
just one moment of time.
Yeah.
And allow it to become the definitive version of, you know, of
yeah.
what song you're playing.
Yeah.
So there's something a little bit artificial about a studio environment, right, as opposed to a concert environment, because we mostly play concert. So the psychological trick is to put yourself in the mode of just going for it
yeah.
as if you were playing a concert, while all the while in the back of your mind knowing that actually this is going to be and this is the version that you're going to live with forever.
Yeah.
So I was kind of just wanting to prod people's I mean, I think serious jazz fans, they know this. Even jazz musicians sometimes forget it. You know, we listen to these albums, and it's kind of just extraordinary that we would be singing along with totally different solos if it had been just a few seconds later. So I wanted to just kind of...
Yeah.
You know, exactly. Hold that thought in front of people as they were listening to what we were doing.
That's really interesting.
And good, yeah, as you say, like, interesting to be reminded of, even if we do sort of, if we're familiar with jazz and we appreciate it. But,
well,
interestingly, I mean, as you say, a jazz album, a jazz recording is very much an instant in time, but it also is going to be building on the musical influences of the people who are there. You know, there's a heritage behind that moment in time that builds up to it, which brings me to my next question, which is about the sort of musical influences behind the album, because I was interesting to see that they're quite broad. There's obviously a clear Brazilian music influence, which we've already seen in some of your previous albums. There are covers of Javan, of Chico Buarque. You also play sort of straight up bebop. There's even some Haitian folk music. So can you tell us a bit about how those influences came together and sort of crystallized to form this album?
Yeah, I think that one thing I've always been interested in, one thing I've always firmly believed is that a jazz musician's artistry is his improvisational voice.
Yeah.
And, you know, one way to, you know, if you take somebody like Herbie Hancock or Joe Henderson, you know, or Stan Getz, you put them in any context and they make magnificent music kind of in any genre, any style.
Yeah.
Somehow being themselves, bringing themselves to it, stamping it strongly with their, you know, with their creative improvisational voice. And yet being flexible enough to be a part of virtually anything. And that's a jazz musician skill par excellence. I don't think there's any other kind of musicians that can pull that off. And that, so to me, that's kind of what makes us high-level artists. So I've always been interested in kind of approaching different kinds of material that move me for different reasons. And trying to put my stamp on it,
yeah.
and sort of do it my way, such that I hope that this album and all my albums sound like a coherent whole. There's a coherent stamp on whatever it is that we're doing. But I've always been interested in exploring kind of different modes, different moods. You could call it different, influences from different parts of the world. But I sort of see that as something that jazz musicians have always done.
Yeah.
And I continue to enjoy challenging myself to do that. And it's possible that sometimes, there's not enough internal stylistic coherence at the end of the day. I hope that there is, and that I hope that, I continue to refine that ability to do that, to take all these different kinds of material and make it my own.
Yeah. So you've also collaborated with a huge number of different artists. I mentioned a few at the beginning, but the list goes on. Al Foster, Nicholas Payton, Stefan Harris, to mention just a few. Is there one particular collaboration or partnership with a musician or a group of musicians that's been really that's had a real impact on you, that's been really influential?
Absolutely. I realized that there was something that I wanted to say in kind of a longer, just a relation to the last question you asked.
Yeah.
There's another way to answer that question, which is basically like, I fall in love with certain kinds of material for unknown magical reasons.
Yeah.
So, I get moved listening to Lee Konitz. I get moved listening to Javan. I get moved listening to Bach. I get moved listening to certain things.
Yeah.
And I'm never quite sure exactly why that is, which is part of what makes art and music great.
Yeah.
So I kind of also, in addition to, it's not so much that I set out to explore all of this different material, but what I try to do is to play things that move me. Whether I wrote them or somebody else wrote them, I try to play music that emotionally moves me and bring my improvisational skills and my artistry to that music. So that music may come from Brazil, it may come from Cuba, it may come from Haiti, it may come from Omer Avital, it may come from Joshua Redman, it may come from my own hand, it may come from Kurt. I kind of feel like the beauty is the mystery, and the mystery is the beauty, and I'm exploring material based on what I fall in love with, and it may end up drawing on a lot of different genres or styles. So maybe that's a better way to answer your question.
Yeah, but I know it makes sense.
This question is I have to say that your my longest standing musical relationships are the ones that have influenced me most. For sure, my relationship with Ruben and Eric, and also with Greg Hutchinson and Ali Jackson and Omer Avital, those are some of my oldest and longest musical relationships. And you play with the people that you love, and you also play with the people you grew up with, and the relationships that last are the ones that are really good. So, and finally, I would say the guy that I've been performing with for the longest time is Joshua Redman. So in addition to working with all those guys I mentioned in my own bands and cooperative projects, I have a long-standing relationship playing in Josh's band, and I've really enjoyed that. I've learned a lot from him, and I've discovered so much of myself through those concerts. I've learned so much about losing yourself in a larger whole and becoming one with your fellow musicians, and kind of falling in love with them as musicians, and becoming selfless and generous, serving the larger whole. I think just Joshua sets an extremely high level of creativity in his playing.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
I remember what it was like to play my first gigs with him and think like, oh my God, I have to follow that. But he just played that, so now I have to take a solo after that. And just growing into that, learning how to deal with that high level of novelty and excitement, the unexpected, and just being in the moment, in the now. Josh is a master of that. He was a young master of that. Now he's a middle-aged master of that, and he continues every night to play his ass off and set a high standard. As of course, through most of those other guys you mentioned that I also worked with. I just had the opportunity to play with Josh for the longest time. And also I've learned a lot as an accompanist, you know, the subtleties of accompanying well. Of course, everybody likes different kinds of accompaniment. I think Josh and I have found a really nice, you know, musical relationship, partly because of the way that we play together. Anyway, it's a joy to continue to work with him after all these years, especially with Ruben and Greg, the band. You know, we grow together and we're tight, but we don't play together all the time, so it's still fresh. It's been a joy.
Well, I mean, it's fascinating to hear you talk. I've seen you perform a couple of times with Joshua Redman's band, and it's always fascinating to see you guys play together and interact together. Unfortunately, we're running out of time, but I want to ask you one last question. Upcoming projects. Is there an album in the making? Are you going to be collaborating with Leon on something?
Yes. Thanks. Yeah, we have a new album. We actually recorded it. It's basically finished. Going to come out sometime in 2018. Not sure exactly what month yet, but with Leon and also the bass player is Matt Penman, one of my oldest. Another guy I've been playing with for 20-something years who went to Berkeley in the early 90s. And he's one of my best friends off the bandstand as well.
Awesome.
So we have a nice project with Leon and Matt that I'm looking forward to putting out and hopefully touring as well.
Awesome. Well, Aaron, thanks so much for
being here.
It's been a real pleasure talking to you. So once again, that was Aaron Goldberg. His latest album, The Now, was released a couple of years ago, and you can check it out on Spotify, on iTunes. It's fantastic. He'll be performing this week at the Sunset Sunside in Paris. That's on the 13th, 14th, and 15th of this month. So don't miss out if you're in the area. Many thanks again, Aaron. I'm Luke Seabright, and that was our jazz interview program.
C'était Jazz Interview avec Luke Seabright. Vous pouvez écouter cette émission les mardis et jeudis à 8h et 14h et retrouver tous nos podcasts sur notre site internet artdistrict-radio.com. Très belle journée, à notre écoute.